Good morning from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. Welcome to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, your host, garden expert, horticulturist, landscape designer. I love helping people with their landscapes, with their gardening problems, and this is the show to do it. And I just want to wish everyone a happy Easter weekend. And it's going to be a beautiful gardening week. So good morning, Lizzie. Happy Easter.
Good morning. Happy Easter to you, too.
And it's a little chilly this morning.
A little bit, but I really am not going to complain about it.
No, because we got record highs coming this week. But good news is it's only going to be sunny, great weather for sunrise services. That's what Tony and I will be doing. And then gardening the rest of the week, getting those April plants in the ground. And so do you have any plans for Easter?
Just, you know, the grand brats are going to be over, so we'll do a little Easter stuff here and do some dinner and stuff with them. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we're making a lamb. And so
you guys are so brave. I've never been brave enough to cook lamb before.
Yeah, so we love doing that. So we're looking forward to it. And then also the jelly bellies and the jelly beans. I love the black ones.
Ooh. What?
The black jelly beans.
All right. Everybody heard that? Y'all save them and then give them to Teresa. Okay.
I love that. And I love the chocolates and all the good things. And hot cross buns. We had hot cross buns yesterday for Good Friday.
Thank you and Tony so much. Okay, because they bring me little treats every once in a while, and they brought me in some hot crust buns, fresh cross hot buns.
Fresh hot crust buns.
Thank you.
One a penny, two a penny hot crust buns.
And they're amazing. Like, I took a bite, and there's no fake carrot in there. Like, there's a chunk of carrots in there, and it is so good. So thank you, and thank you, Tony.
Oh, you're so welcome. So weather in Key West, you guys are going to have a spectacular weekend. Great for gardening. 70s and 80s, low 70s at night, no rain. That's the downside, but the rainy weather is coming. Tampa, you're going to be in the 70s and 80s, lows in the 70s. And you are going to have rain on Wednesday, about a 70% chance. So it's going to be some good rain for you. Central Florida, same thing. We're going to get rain next Wednesday, 60% chance they're saying right now. And nice temperatures, 70s and 80s this week. And then North Florida, you're definitely going to get some rain on Tuesday and Wednesday. And the temperatures are going to be a little cooler, but still in the 70s. So that's lovely spring weather. I'd like to thank everyone who came out to the Wildflower Festival last weekend. Lizzie, it was spectacular. So many people came, so many great plants. And I just have to thank everyone. They came up afterwards and said, we listened to your show. Ruth came. And I just want to say hi to Ruth. Her daughter is into gardening and is a real good gardener. Mm-hmm. And Ruth said, you've got to listen to the show. And I said, well, thank you, Ruth.
Aww.
Getting her to listen to the show. That's wonderful. Another nice couple came up, and I just loved meeting everyone. They were just really wonderful. I did a talk on natural pest control.
Okay.
And it was they well received. So I really do appreciate everyone coming. And so this is also the weekend before April Fool's. And so I'll be talking a little bit about the pranks that have been passed on and occurred on gardening. And then we have Tina McIntyre coming up. And April is also Water Conservation Month. So everything happens in April. And we do want to make sure Florida has wonderful, wonderful spring waters. And we just need to protect our water supply. So Tina's going to be talking about that. And you want to get pen and paper because she's going to be giving some really good advice on the new smart technology for the automatic irrigation system. So
I'm
looking forward to that. And then also, too, we're going to be talking in the second hour, Garden Myths, Fact or Fiction, April Fools. And I'm just really looking forward to it. So I have to post a picture. I'm going to do it for Easter, so it'll be up tomorrow. But I had a cactus fall over, and it just laid there.
Oh,
and it grew, and it grew, and it looks like the Easter Bunny waving. And so it's got the rabbit ears, it's got the face, it's got the hand waving, And so I'll be posting that picture tomorrow.
I really hope that you're going to start decorating it, like maybe, you know, and then whenever, you know, Christmas comes around, put a Santa hat on it. It's the Easter Santa.
Yeah, yeah. The bunny ears would have to go through Santa's hat.
Well, I'll make it for you.
Okay. I love that. And I just had a wonderful, wonderful week of, you know, lots of hard work, but clients walking through their properties. I was in Alachua County on Thursday, and I will tell you, Gainesville looks just like North Carolina in some.
Just, it does. Yes.
It's remarkable how beautiful the communities are there with all the trees and just driving the highways. They got beautiful highways up there. And then also, too, yesterday, I was in a property that just makes me feel so relaxed, and we're going to be making a moon gate. I'll be talking about that.
A
moon gate.
Hmm.
And for their property, and then also creating a moonlit garden. And it's going to be real pretty. So I'm very excited. I had a really great creative week this week. Lots of things done. And so we have Tina McIntyre coming up. She is the Florida Friendly Landscaping Agent at the University of Florida's Seminole County Extension. And she is fantastic. So I'm going to look forward to seeing her. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. With us right now is Tina McIntyre. She is the Florida Friendly Landscaping Agent at the University of Florida Institute of Food and Agricultural Science Extension Office in Seminole County. She specializes in surface water quality and quantity, best management practices related to landscape management, and restoration of urban green space. Good morning, Tina. Happy Easter.
Good morning. Happy Easter weekend, everyone.
There you go. I'm so glad you're here this morning. Are you and your new family, your new baby, ready for the Easter bunny?
We are. We're so excited. Yeah, we're going to do some egg hunting this weekend and definitely have some Easter fun.
That's wonderful. So April is also Water Conservation Month in Florida. So why do we celebrate it in the month of April?
Yeah, so April tends to be really dry and windy. And of course, there's exceptions. We might get a rainstorm here and there. But in general, April tends to be just so dry for our soils and our plants. And so when we look to our landscapes, they need water. And so people are thinking about water. They're thinking about irrigating. And we want to do that in a responsible way. And so that's why our local governments and our state have named it Water Conservation Month.
So 2023 and 2024 winter with the El Nino was drier than normal. And we experienced a drought last year. Are we still in a drought situation?
So most of the state of Florida is actually not in a drought. With all the wet and stormy weather that we did have over the, you know, kind of winter season, the drought has virtually disappeared. And I actually looked this up from our Florida Climate Center, the Office of the State Climatologist. Now, there is one small part of Florida, which is around the Tampa area, that does have a little bit of abnormally dry, but it's not even considered a drought. So right now, technically, we're doing pretty good, Teresa.
That's great news. No April Fools on that. That's wonderful. So we have restrictions on the use of water in the landscape. But generally, people think of restrictions as being punishment, you know, and that they could only water twice a week, and that they think that our landscapes need more. And so tell us about how much water does the lawn and landscapes really need?
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think people might think I'm only can water twice or I have to water twice, but we kind of want to scratch all that and just start with the rain. We want to think about the rain and the amount of rain that we're getting, because it can vary. Like we just said, one winter could be really droughty, one winter could be really wet. So how much rain are we getting within the last couple weeks? And then think about the rain as the primary source of water for our plants. And so, you know, if it's dry, we want to use irrigation as a supplement to that rain. And think about the amount of rain on a weekly basis and calibrate that irrigation system accordingly. And so looking for wilting leaves, curling turf grass, and watering appropriately to keep those plants alive, keep them happy.
Because even watering more often or longer, I mean, like for hours, really isn't helpful to the plant, is it?
Correct. And we can cause fungus, fungal growth. You know, we can cause saturated roots, and we really don't want to be doing that, because that brings on disease. We see that a lot with our turf grass laboratory that we have, where they're bringing in samples of overwatered turf grass.
And even dollar weed. Most people don't realize that dollar weed's an aquatic plant.
Yes, we see it on our lake shores, and when we're over irrigating, we can actually walk through the neighborhood. If you're seeing neighbors with dollar weed, chances are their irrigation is just running overtime.
That's important. So all kinds of new technology are out. So and it helps homeowners with their irrigation systems. So let's start off with the rain shutoff device. How important is that?
Yeah, so the rain shutoff device is required by state law for all functioning irrigation systems, commercial, residential. Doesn't matter if you have an irrigation system, it is required. And this is kind of our classic piece of technology. So it's been around for a long time. It's made of these cork discs that are in there. So you think about your wine cork that you take out. It's basically little cork discs in there. And when it rains, they swell up over time, and it shuts off the system once they get to a certain swollen point. And it literally just helps you shut off that system if it's raining.
And I will tell you that I have so many people, and even professional landscapers and people who, you know, take care of lawns on a regular basis, they say, oh, the rain shutoff device doesn't work. Well, is that really the case?
It can be. So initially, they're going to be functioning well, but it's just like anything that we put outside, just like our, you know, patio seat cushions, they're going to degrade over time. We're going to have to do an upgrade. And so when you're doing your seat cushions, think about that rain shutoff device as well. Buy a new one, you know, because the cork in there is really going to break down from the water and the heat and the sun and all that. So, you know, at first they're probably functioning really well, but just like anything we put out in the Florida sun, it's going to degrade over time.
So I like the new smart irrigation controllers. My clients are very happy with them. They can just take their phone out and they can tell them all kinds of different things. How do they work?
Yeah, I really like them too. I have one for my house, and I've been able to play around with it for a couple years now. And I really recommend that people consider a smart irrigation controller. It actually pulls in the weather forecast and adjusts that irrigation system for you. So they look at the future forecast. They know how much rain was actually deposited locally. They can adjust seasonally. So you can set it for a rainy season. And best of all, it connects, like you said, to the app on our phone. So you can adjust your irrigation. When you get a text from a neighbor that says, hey, you have a geyser in your front yard, well, you're on vacation in Fiji. You know, you can just get on Wi-Fi and fix that right away.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, and more excitingly, Teresa, we actually received a grant to offer these to our Seminole County residents for free within the next year. So definitely people should stay on the lookout for that.
Oh, that's incredible. That's a great program because, you know, rain shutoff devices, you know, will cost between $30 and $40. And that will save you hundreds of dollars a year. But these rain shutoff or the smart controllers, how expensive are they?
So they're usually going to run upwards of $50 to $100, depending on what you're getting. And some of them, if they're real fancy, you can up into the couple hundred bucks. And so it is a great program that we're going to be able to offer these for free in conjunction with our educational coursework, of course.
Sure. They're going to have to come to a class and learn how to use them.
Yeah.
I think that's totally worth it. Okay. That's a great deal. Let me know when you start that. And so drought tolerant, this is one of my pet peeves, Tina, that people think, and it's even in city and county municipal codes, that the only thing you can plant is drought tolerant plants. And they don't understand the terminology. What makes a plant drought tolerant?
Right. So some plants actually evolve to be drought tolerant. So think of, for example, aloe, right? It's a plant that we use here in Florida. Drought tolerant plants tend to have, you know, and not necessarily aloe, but they in general have deep roots. They might have a more kind of grayish color. They could be small or succulent. They might have hairs on them or waxy leaves. And basically the ability to go dormant during a drought. And these are adaptations that have evolved over thousands of years. And so when we think about drought tolerant, there are specific species that have evolved these characteristics. Now, we can certainly push the envelope on some of our plants locally and, you know, calibrate them to be a little bit more drought resilient so they can kind of, you know, go through those times. But so if you think about a plant in a greenhouse that's getting misted five times a day versus our turf grass that might be, you know, going 10 days without getting any water or rain, we're challenging it locally. But really, drought tolerant means a species that has those adaptations.
So let's talk about turf grass. How much water does a typical lawn need?
So we really want to think about, start with our soils, right? So everybody has different soils. If it's got a lot of organic material, if it's an urban compacted soil, and that really matters for turf grass. So if you have a old stand of turf grass that's doing well, it might be a lot more resilient and established than something that's new, of course. So in general, think about your soils first. And when you look at your turf grass, if it is needing irrigation, if the leaves are curling, you're going to want to look for apply 1/2 to 3/4 of an inch to that landscape. So, you know, you can also consider top dressing of compost that really can enhance your lawn. So 1/4 of an inch of compost over the lawn can actually enhance that soil and that water-saving ability of your turf grass.
That's excellent. So you mentioned you have events coming up. So where can people find out, what are they and where can people find them?
Yes, Water Conservation Month is huge in Seminole County. So we have on April 11th coming up a workshop, an online webinar about rain barrels. We have a Thursday, the 18th, we're going to be having a tree class talking all about trees and tree planting. That's at 2:00 on the 18th. And then if people attend, they can actually win free rain barrels and free trees for pickup for our event at April 20th at the Lowe's in Sanford. It's Saturday from 9:30 to 11:30. Pick up your free trees if you've attended the classes. We also have, of course, yours truly, Teresa Watkins, is going to be there answering questions. So we hope that people can come on out for a great event on 4/20 at the Lowe's.
It's always a fun event, and people love getting their trees and all their beautiful plants. So it's a great time. So I'm looking forward to being there with you, and you have such great classes, Tina. Thank you so much for coming on and telling us about Water Conservation Month. Will you come back again?
Absolutely. Anytime.
All right, hon. Happy Easter. Have a great weekend. Thank you so much, Tina.
Same to you all. Take care.
Take care, hon. Bye-bye. And you can go to the Seminole County Extension Office and find out more information about that. And I'll give you more information about the Lowe's event. You want to make sure you sign up for those events to get those free trees. Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios and Florida's Entertainment and Talk Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. Now is the time to give us a call or text us and let us know what you're doing. If you're having a morning beverage and listening to the show, we're so glad you're with us. You can call 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680. Lizzie is standing by, and we are looking forward to talking with you. So 1-888-455-2967. So I just wanted to, let's see, here we go. Where am I? April Fool's Day. In 2002, Lizzie, the British supermarket chain Tesco published an advertisement in The Sun announcing a new genetically modified whistling carrot. The carrots were said to be grown with tapered air holes in their side, and when fully cooked, the holes would cause the carrot to whistle.
Hmm.
They had people standing in line for it.
Really?
Yes. Huh. Yes.
So, okay.
So that was the April Fool's Day joke for carrots. And so that I can just see just all of that going on. So I also wanted to mention a little bit about eggs today. So a curious aspect of tree frogs, they lay their eggs in a little foam nest. Now, can you imagine that, the little bubbles, and the frogs lay their eggs in the foam bubbles? And so when it comes to laying eggs, tree frogs have some unusual habits. Instead of always laying their eggs on tree branches where they usually live, they lay their eggs on the ground. But why would a tree frog, Lizzie, especially do this when the eggs are at risk on the ground from predators such as snakes?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, you would think that would be counterintuitive.
Mm-hmm.
And so the forest green tree frog, a species commonly found in Japanese forests, found that the behavior is part of a strategy to avoid colder temperatures in the trees where the ground is warmer.
Oh.
And so the foam nest, and I just love that, foam nest for frog eggs. They create these nests by bubbling secretions from their bodies to protect the eggs. The foam nest is usually white or light in color, resembling a mass of small bubbles clustered together. And so by planting them in, or to, you know, laying them in the ground around these foam nests, or in these foam nests, they are literally protecting them and keeping them warmer so that they will hatch.
That is genius.
Isn't it? That is so genius. So speaking of eggs, you are starting to, you're getting a new industry. And so tell us what you're doing with eggs.
Okay, so I have been fascinated for years by what one of the couple of Thanksgiving turkey icons that they usually use for pictures, and one of them is the bourbon red turkey. So I keep staring at them and staring at them, and I'm
they're
like, you
so
know,
beautiful.
They are gorgeous, because just look it up. Look up bourbon red turkey, and they're beautiful. So I'm like, you know what? I want to do 4-H with the Graham Brats, but unfortunately one of them lives about 45 minutes, which that's not far, but you can't really do 4-H and, you know, taking care of the pigs and stuff before school, be living that far away. So I'm like, you know what? We're just going to do our own situation. So I'm like, I really wanted turkeys. I've raised chickens, I've raised cows, I've raised pigs, and it's been a few years. But I'm like, you know what? This is what we're going to do this year. So I went online and I ordered them, and I'm asking anybody who prays to please pray that my turkeys come alive and healthy and survive. Because
they're going to be wee little things.
They're going to be little bitties. And I'm not sure when, because whenever I went to 6 different hatcheries across the United States to try to find the ones that I liked, it's like, oh, pick your date, April, June, August, September, and I'm like, oh wow, so I have some time to really think about this and change my mind. But then I was warned by the feed store that there's a possibility that turkeys are very sensitive, so
emotionally or physically.
Okay. So they said that, you know, whenever they come in, if they're cold, immediately get them as warm as you can, fast. Like, don't even like wait to get home, like try to bring a heat blanket with you in your vehicle, because of the fact that they could die like within days, and once they get a chill, that's like it. So but that's what the feed store guy told me, so we'll see. That's my adventure.
And I wanted to remind everyone that you can tell the color of the ears of a chicken by the color of the eggs. So really? when you see brown eggs, mm-hmm. the chicken had brown ears. If you see red eggs, and there are red eggs out there on the market, mm-hmm. the chicken will have red ears. I didn't even think of chicken as having ears, right. just to be honest. It's just something you never think about. Mm-hmm. And if the eggs are blue, the chicken has blue ears.
Nice. Okay, yeah. I mean, I've raised chickens in the past, but it's been probably 30 years since I've done chickens. But yeah, so I'm super excited, and I didn't even think about that. So that's going to be something I'll pass on to my grandbrats. Yeah. Is, hey, look at the ears.
Oh, well, I can't wait to see. I just think it's a wonderful idea. You've got plenty of room, mm-hmm. and it's just an ideal experience for the kids.
And I saw on Wikipedia that the bourbon red turkeys are considered endangered, like going in being endangered. Extinct. So
wow, that's something. Well, you'll be doing your part for the environment.
Yeah, eat them too.
I would have to grow tequila red turkey.
So I'll get on that for you.
There you go. See if we can find that on the internet. So this is the time of the year to plant, and we're getting ready for warmer temperatures now, so we're not going to have any more cool temperatures. So the vegetables and plants that you want to plant can take the heat. So calabaza and cantaloupe, season for melons right now. Cassava and chayote, cherry and Everglades tomato. And I will have to tell you, I have a client that grows the Everglades tomato. And I will tell you, Lizzie, it is so delicious.
Really?
These are, the Everglades tomato are so sweet, you just pop them in your mouth. I'll get you one.
Okay.
Okay. And there was like hundreds of them on this. And Gary's just doing a great job. But the Everglades tomatoes, they produce all year round. They're very nice and sweet and delicious. So Everglades tomato, if you want to get them, they're wonderful. Cucumbers, dasheens, eggplants, Jerusalem artichokes, yakamas, lima beans, and Malabar spinach and malanga, New Zealand spinach. These are all spinaches that you can grow in the summertime, and they can take the heat. Okra and peppers, roselle and Seminole pumpkins, snap beans. I love snap beans. Squash and southern peas, sweet potato, tamarillos, yam, and yard-long beans. These are all the vegetables that can be growing this time of the year. Our average temperature is 83 during the month of April. Lows are in the 60s, and we're going to get about 2.5 inches of rain. From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, I'm Teresa Watkins. It's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Good morning. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. And if you'd like to give us a call, 1-888-455-2967. Lizzie will put you right on the board. And if you'd like to text 23680, look forward to talking with you. Let's go to Vic in Polk County. Good morning, Vic. Happy Easter.
Good morning. Same to you. I love listening to your program.
Thank you.
I called last week. And I live in Polk, to give you an update, I live in Polk City in Polk County. I have 2.5 acres. It's an old grapefruit grove. It's real sandy soil. Mm-hmm. I have bahia grass. I've lived here since the 90s. I used to have a beautiful lawn. I'm getting crabgrass scattered. So mm-hmm. This week I went and brought crabgrass herbicide.
Okay.
I have a three-part question. I bought three crabgrass herbicide. I also bought 2,4-D for my weeds I'm getting in my yard.
Mm-hmm.
And I have sent off a soil test to the University of Florida, and I'm waiting for it to come back so I know what to fertilize. Now, when do I put out the grabgrass herbicide in relationship to 2,4-D? I don't want to overdo it and kill my grass.
Right.
And also, when can I fertilize?
Okay, so now, is your crabgrass herbicide, is it a pre-emergent or is it for mature plants? Is it an herbicide?
It's a herb. It's a, let me see. It's a XLR8 crabgrass herbicide.
Okay, so if you're putting down a fertilizer, you can do that about 2 weeks after you do the herbicide. So go ahead and do the herbicide now while you're waiting, okay?
Okay.
And then when the university gets back to you, they will tell you exactly how much fertilizer to put on. Did you tell them that it was former orange groves? Did you write that down?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
No, I didn't.
So let me just tell you, because of the decades and decades of citrus growing on there, you probably have a lot of minerals in your soil, like phosphorus and potassium, from the groves' fertilization. So I'll be interested in hearing what they recommend for you for your site. But yeah, you can go ahead and put down the crabgrass herbicide right now. And go ahead and follow the label as to how much.
Now, when can I put down the 2,4-D?
Well, the 2,4-D is for all the leaves. So if you wanted to do it, do you just really only have crabgrass, or do you have other weeds instead?
Well, I've got 2.5 acres, but I've got probably a third of it. I've got crabgrass coming up.
Okay.
The rest of it, I just have weeds on the whole place.
Okay, so then just go ahead and put the 2,4-D dicamba down and not do the crabgrass at all. You don't want to do double, because the 2,4-D will get rid of the crabgrass, too.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I've been told different, so.
Okay, well, okay. You know, go ahead and put the 2,4-D dicamba down and just see. How often are you watering?
Once or twice a week.
Okay, that's fine. That's just exactly what you should be doing. So go ahead, and then after that, you may want to go ahead and reseed the bahia grass in May or June, and that way you're going to get a thicker lawn. Thicker lawn is going to mean that you have less weeds, more competition.
Okay. In May or June?
Yeah, whenever you get ready. After you get the results from the University of Florida, you can go ahead and fertilize, and I would do that, and then in a couple of weeks, go ahead and put down your bahia grass seed. Get the Argentina.
Okay.
Okay? And that
okay,
way, and
do not put the crabgrass herbicide down.
No, I wouldn't.
2,4-D and see if it kills it.
Right, exactly. I don't want you to nuke your lawn. And so, using both of them, and if you've got other weeds beside the crabgrass, let's go ahead and do the 2,4-D dicamba, and then see what happens with that. Okay,
and then if it doesn't kill the crabgrass, then put the herbicide down for crabgrass.
Yes, that's what I would do. But I would wait about a month in between, a month to 6 weeks in between.
Okay. I can put the 2,4-D now, and
yes,
soon as I get result back, like 2 weeks, I can go ahead and seed and fertilize.
Yes, fertilize first, and then go ahead and put the seed down.
Okay.
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 Let me know what's happening,
thank
Vic.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it. Let's go to Tom in Merritt Island. Good morning, Tom. Hi.
Hi. So I had some comments on Everglades tomato.
Okay.
You are correct, absolutely correct, that it's delicious.
It is, isn't it?
It's a vigorous grower. It appears to be highly resistant to root knot nematodes. But the other side of it is that if you have rich soil and you water it, it is very aggressive. It'll actually turn into a ground cover, and I've had free plants cover my whole garden. So people need to know that. And the other thing is that it's highly susceptible to spider mites.
Yeah,
and
I can imagine that. Because it grows so thick and dense.
What does it in is it'll grow up to a point, and then the spider mites take over, and the whole thing is covered in webs.
Yeah. And so one of the things to do, though, is to kind of open it up. You can remove some of the branches and the leaves to get good air circulation in there. And, you know, and it, because it is so vigorous, you're still going to have a good harvest. But I would just make sure it's getting good air circulation. That will reduce the spider mites.
Yeah, and the other aspect is that because the tomatoes are very small, it's extremely labor-intensive to pick them, to pick a sizable amount of them. So,
well, if you're just standing there, you got
to
pick them. Yeah, I so agree with you. And I was just amazed to see the harvest on it. And so, yeah, it can be. But you know, that's what you have kids for.
I suppose so. I don't have any kids. The other thing is that the perennial spinaches, this is a good time to plant them. Longevity, I don't know if you mentioned these in your list, longevity spinach, Okinawa spinach, Sisu spinach.
And malanga.
Yeah, no, not malanga. Malanga is a root crop, isn't it?
Malanga's a spinach. Well, Malanga, but there's Malanga spinach.
Oh, well, I'm not acquainted with that, but there's, but there are a bunch of
tropical spinaches. I'm sorry. Let me take that back. It's early in the morning. Malabar spinach is what I was thinking.
Malabar
Malanga
spinach,
is a root
yes.
crop. Malabar spinach,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Malabar spinach,
yes.
Yeah. More and New Zealand spinach, it will come up. You know, I've had it self-seeded, and it started growing for me in January, and it's covering a large portion of my garden right now. So you don't have to wait until this time to plant it, but you can plant it now, so that's the good part.
Yeah. So, Tom, so how big is your garden?
Well, I have about, I've got three plots.
Wow.
And three separate plots, and one's about 180 square feet, the other is 150, and the other one is about 200.
That's great.
So not one plot, but three plots. There's a big avocado tree between them. I sheet composted the area, and the avocado absolutely loved that. So I've got a lot of avocado roots in my garden, but that's okay. The veggies grow anyway.
What kind of avocado do you have?
It's a seedling. It's similar to the Booth variety, but the fruit's very large.
So. Okay, so it's not is it grafted?
No, it's a seedling.
That's what I was going to say. But it sounds like it's big, so you're already getting fruit. So it's been there for 5 to 7 years.
Yeah, it's about 18 feet tall, I'd estimate.
Wow. Good for you, Tom. I love hearing about that. That's wonderful. So do you grow all through the summertime?
Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. It's easier just to put heavy mulch down over it and just let it rest.
Yeah, I appreciate that. How do you water it?
With a hose.
You stand out there with a hose?
Yes.
God bless you. That's incredible. Yep. Wow, that's pretty good. Okay, so how often do you water?
Right now, twice a week.
Good for you. That's great. Well, excellent, Tom. Thank you for checking in. I love that. And so where did you get your Everglades tomato? Was it somebody that gave you some seeds?
Yeah, it was. Someone was giving it away at a meeting of the Brevard Tropical Fruit Club.
Oh, great, yeah.
And by the way, the Tropical Fruit Club has their fruit tree sale at the end of April. So.
Excellent. Well, call me back and remind me or send me the information. I'll let everyone know.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, Tom. Appreciate it.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye. That was Tom from Merritt Island. And Everglades tomatoes are wonderful. I love that he waters his garden by hand.
I can appreciate that. I'm kind of running around doing that because I don't want my pumpkins to get watered, overwatered. And so I'm actually have to move my raised beds to another spot. So... because the watering system that we have is soaking them too much. So.
Oh, my goodness gracious. But mm-hmm. they're growing and they're doing okay.
By the grace of God. Thank you, yes. Dear Jesus. Literally so far. Yes, we've come this far before. So
that's wonderful. Well, the next hour, we're going to talk about garden myths and April Fool's jokes. And we're going to be taking your gardening questions, 1-888-455-2967. Love to hear from you. You can text us or you can call in. Lizzie would love to hear from you. And I want to thank Tina McIntyre for coming on. She's the Florida Friendly Landscaping Agent for Seminole County and at the IFAS Seminole County Extension Office. And April is Water Conservation Month, and it's a good idea to pay attention to how much water you use. If you don't know how much, look at your water bill. It will tell you the gallons. And if you're listening to us on Saturday mornings, it's Better Lawns and Gardens. My name is Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.
Go to our website, betterlawns.com, and check out all the interesting facts that we have there. And you can also listen to the past shows. That's betterlawns.com.